I never thought that I would miss Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah.
Did not like this show.
You did not like this show? Wow.
Did you?
I didn't hate it.
Hello and welcome to It's the Greatest Show, Man, the podcast where we talk about the musicals you love and why they're great and why they suck. I'm your host, Emily Chavone, and with me as always is my co-host, Brantley Wheeler.
For now.
Hopefully.
hopefully I'll stay your co-host or hopefully I'll leave.
I'll let you interpret that however you want to.
I feel like you want me to leave.
No comment.
Great, thanks. Thanks for the vote of confidence.
How does it feel to have your best friend be mean to you?
It's not fun.
Blink, blink. How does that taste? Right. Your medicine flavored?
Yeah, and I don't like it. It's bitter. It's bitter and sad.
That tracks. Speaking of bitter and sad, this week...
What a segue.
We're talking about a musical called The Civil War. I need to stop laughing because some of my points later are going to be really bad if I'm laughing through this.
Well, I think it's safe to say every season we have talked about a Broadway and or off-Broadway flop, and this is one of them. For sure.
Yeah. At this point, I haven't looked at the rest of our season because I'm scared that next week is also going to be terrible. And like Les Mis was good, but that feels so far away.
Yeah.
Especially since I've had With One Look stuck in my head. Yeah. So The Civil War. This is an American musical with music by Frank Wildhorn, lyrics by Jack Murphy, and a book by Gregory Boyd and Frank Wildhorn. It premiered at the Alley Theater in Houston in 1998, followed by a transfer to Broadway in April of 1999. It was nominated for 2 Tony Awards, Best Musical, Best Original Score, winning neither. The production closed in June of 99 after 35 previews and 61 performances, and was followed by a U.S. national tour in 2000. The show's had a few notable regional productions, including a revised version in 2006 at the Majestic Theater in Gettysburg, and a 2009 run at Ford's Theater in D.C. after major renovations were completed for the Lincoln Bicentennial.
That's cool. I mean, not the musical, just the fact that it performed at Ford's Theater for Lincoln's thing. But, you know.
Remember that guy who was shot here? He's briefly mentioned in this musical.
Yeah, I made a note about that.
He has a voiceover where they don't even clarify that it's him.
Yep. Yep. Granted, so I'm going to just assume that the only recorded quote unquote soundtrack we have for the show is the Civil War, the complete work, which is a 2-disc, too many song, 19 song.
There are multiple versions.
Compilation album? There's multiple versions of the soundtrack, but this is the one that's like the full show or whatever, where it has like a more than one like monologue from Lincoln that's like a voiceover. But apparently when this got revised, at least one of, if not both of them, got cut, or then something else got added, maybe. It's weird. This is a weird... This show's weird in its history. I have a little brief synopsis here.
Okay.
And I'll just kind of go over it. I mean, this is like literally the briefest synopsis I've ever written for a show, probably. Synopsis of the show is, it's a musical that presents the story of the American Civil War from three separate viewpoints. The Union, the Confederacy, and the slaves, all told in a series of vignettes that may or may not be connected with each other. Actors are meant to portray multiple characters while trying to keep them all distinct from one another, despite the fact that most of them have no defining character traits beyond man or woman or soldier or slave. And that's kind of it. Also, Frederick Douglass is there. He's like the only named character that returns multiple times.
I think if you are well-versed in literature from the Civil War, you would probably pick up on the fact that it's... I guess Frederick Douglass does say who he is. But
he
I does. Think...
He says, I'm Frederick Douglass.
Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. Like, actually, so... there's an interview with Frank Wildhorn where he talks about the making of this show. It's from 2013. I think MTI is the one that posted it on YouTube. Basically, what he says is they took like real documents from the Civil War and used it to mm-hmm. create all of these characters. So a lot of the lyrics and a lot of the dialogue are like almost verbatim from these mm-hmm. letters. So I think if you were well versed, you would probably pick up on the fact that like these are words that Lincoln said, or these are words that Frederick Douglass said, even without stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not that well-versed in Civil War history. I've just never been a person who's really interested in war history, particularly like I had a middle school teacher who insisted that we memorize all of the battles of every war in order and like know all of the details about that stuff. And I just don't feel like, unless you are in a field where it's good to know all of those things, I don't see the relevance in like, and then this battle happened, and then this battle happened, and then this battle happened. Like,
right.
Give me the overall implications of the conflict as a whole. Mm-hmm. Not all the minuscule details. Unless you are, I don't know, a Civil War history major. Then know all that stuff. Great. Or like if you're a history teacher, I guess I would expect you to know those details. In the same way that I'm a theater teacher and I know a lot of theater history details.
Sure.
Or, you know, like acting methods and like specific details that way. Know your content, but like seventh graders don't need to know all those details, I don't think. Come at me, history teachers. Sorry to my father-in-law who is a history teacher.
Hi, Lou. How you doing? Woof.
That's about the summary that I had written. I went to MTI because this show is so not produced that it was very difficult to find any recording.
Yeah,
and the one that we found, really I think, is a community theater.
It is. Hold on.
That would be my guess. I didn't pull it up again.
Pulled up. Let me pull it up again real quick. So, I literally just closed that window. Give me a second. It's from Winnemette Community High School.
Oh, okay. So it is a high school production. There seemed to be a lot of girls in it for...
Yeah.
Anyway. So we just went directly to MTI and ordered a perusal script so that we could see what it actually looks like.
Yep.
The production that we were able to see is also from like 2010, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So shows change a lot. It's been 15 years. And it also, like not too long before that... was staged at Ford's Theater. And so sometimes the changes that happen on a professional level take a while to trickle down. So most of what I'm referencing is the version that you can license right now. Today we're recording. It's July 30th, 2025.
Yeah.
This is what you can license. So on MTI's page for their synopsis, this is what MTI lists for this show. Quote, this epic thematic review puts a human face on the greatest tragedy of American history. It explores the experiences of the soldiers and leaders who fought for their way of life. It also examines the lives of the lovers and families whom they left behind, as well as the hopes and fears of enslaved Black Americans whose freedom was at stake. This musical passionately asks us to consider our beliefs about freedom, honor, and faith.
I didn't get any of that.
I think that's what it wants us to feel.
I would agree that it's probably what it wants us to feel, but I am honestly, I'm really glad we had the perusal script because as I remember listening to the soundtrack and then watching that production that we found or that you found and sent to me, that I'm like, what the f*** is happening? in this show? Like, what is going on? Like, it was hard to really follow. Well, because, and that's like the biggest issue with the show. And honestly, like, I went back and literally found reviews of the original production from 1999. And literally all of them said, this does not have a story. And I think that has carried over. I think now that it's been clearly been revised a couple of times, that they've tried to structure it more so it has more of a story structure. But I don't know how successful it is because it's still really hard to follow.
Well, in its original concept, it didn't have costumes and it didn't have a set. It wasn't until it got to Broadway that those things were added because that was the expectation.
Right,
for me, I don't really think it's fair to call it a review. I think it's more of a song cycle, and people who are not well versed in theater don't understand like what a song cycle is and have this expectation for costumes and set and props and all the things. I also feel like one of the problems is this show has like 29 songs.
Yeah.
It's almost all singing. And I think that's too many for a song cycle. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of other examples of song cycles that are two acts and are this long with really like all of the songs are on a theme, but there's not really a plot. Like if you look at the script, you can see there are a couple of characters that make their way through. But like Frederick Douglass is clear, and then like Bill and Sarah. And then there's a handful of Union and Confederate soldiers whose names pop up over and over. But the for the soldiers, I think pretty exclusively, except for like Bill, nobody else is really mentioned by name, and nobody else like you wouldn't see them as distinct characters.
Nope.
Bill and Sarah are the only ones that like have any specific relationship or storyline throughout the piece.
Well, that is more or less true. I will say this. I honestly went and wrote this thing here. I looked at the list of characters that are in the MTI script. And I made a list here that's entitled, Who is Who? Because I'm confused. And so what I wrote was there's two characters named Sam and Nathaniel who are brothers that are fighting on opposite sides, but they're not mentioned by name. Nathaniel also has a solo. He sings. So Sam and Nathaniel are brothers. They both sing in the song that is called A House Divided, which was added later. It was not in the original production. But they sing a song called A House Divided, but their names are not specifically mentioned. Then there's Bill and Sarah, who you mentioned, who are a married couple. There's also a slave couple who are married named Clayton and Bessie, but their names are also not mentioned. They're just there. They sing If Prayin' Were Horses. And then Clayton has a solo where he sings Father How Long. And then Bessie sings another solo in a different song.
The problem is that they come back and they sing other songs that aren't related to their plot specifically.
Right.
Where like Bill and Sarah are the only ones that like when they come back, they're only specifically referencing each other. And so you're like, oh, there's Bill and Sarah again. And they like both, like, there's a whole song called Sarah, which is one of the more famous songs from the show. And then she sings another song with his name in it.
Yeah, she sings Missing You, My Bill.
Oh, is that what it's called?
Yeah, Missing You, parentheses, My Bill.
So, like, everyone else, like, pops in and pops out. And even in the script, it's got the list of characters, and it says parts are to be divided among the ensemble. It started with a cast of like 28 on Broadway, and then when it went on tour, the cast was shrunk down and
to 15.
People were playing multiple characters. So if you are supposed to be portraying a specific character and like there's a loose plot that you're hoping the audience will follow, then you have to be more specific.
Right. Yeah. Well, even like looking at MTI's website for this show, it says there are seven roles. That's it. That there's
Right, but
seven.
usually when they do that, they're talking about like leading roles
Oh,
versus
no.
ensemble roles.
Okay, then what are the seven leads in the show?
Hold on. I can tell you.
Frederick Douglass. And I know that one.
Because even like Adam's Family, I think only lists like it's like 10 roles.
Oh,
And it's
okay.
like, okay, it's the 10 leads
10 10 principal
and
characters.
then the ensemble, which are also roles, but this is why people say, oh, I'm just in the ensemble, and it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
Okay.
We gotta break that stigma, but anyway, continue.
Seven roles. See, when you click on the casting information, it says cast size medium 11 to 20. Cast type includes BIPOC roles, dance requirements none. And then there's a character breakdown. The roles that have any description are Loughran, Sam Taylor, Frederick Douglass, Sarah, Pierce, Harriet, Bessie, and then like Confederate Captain, Union Captain, Benjamin. But
Okay.
there are other characters listed, they just don't have the like a sentence description with like gender, age, vocal range.
Yeah, okay.
This show is, I don't know what to talk about with this show, because it feels like every song is the same. Like everything is a ballad about how sad it was that the Civil War happened.
Yeah. Well, let me just get into some of the comments that I wrote down to myself as I was watching this show. When I first, so I listened to the Complete Work album first, and the prologue and like some of the other, there's some early songs on the album where I was like, oh, the music is beautiful. It's like this big sweeping epic score, and I was like, this sounds like really good. And then the first song happens and Brother, My Brother is a ballad. I'm like, oh, okay. And then the next song was By the Sword slash Sons of Dixie, which is like a bigger, like a more rousing song because they're like rallying to go to war or whatever. And then the next song is Tell My Father. And I'm like, that was on the soundtrack. It's not this way in the show anymore. That song's later in the show. But I was like, I listened to the whole thing and I was like, 70% of these songs are all ballads.
Oh, way more than that.
Well, I originally wrote 90, like 90% of the songs are
But did
ballads.
you
I was like,
notice
maybe not 90, but.
on the only non-ballads were all Confederate songs?
I did notice that. Except for Freedom's Child. Freedom's Child is not a ballad.
I just have so many problems with the show's tone.
Yeah, there's. What was it? Let me find this particular comment that I wrote. Like listening to the show and then watching that one production, I was like, I feel like a lot of the focus is on the Confederate soldiers rather than anyone else. Did you notice that, or am I reading too much into that? Because it felt like they were the ones like they were pushed more to the forefront. It was like the Confederate soldiers and the African Americans were like pushed towards the front of the show. And the Union soldiers are just like, we're here too. But there's like kind of it.
I did feel that way, and I also felt like it made sense after the premiere was in Texas.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about
I
that.
mean, we are talking about like the late 90s, so worldviews were slightly different, and like what's considered okay just in the world is different, and I don't think the show would ever fly in 2025. I can't think of a context for it. But it feels like I don't. Okay, so I found this interview with Frank Wildhorn, and it's from 2013, and it was done for MTI. And first of all, I like a lot of Frank Wildhorn's stuff. I actually semi-secretly enjoy Jekyll and Hyde, even though it's a little over the top. Good and Evil was in my book for a while. Like I just and like Bonnie and Clyde is good, and
Yeah.
Wonderland, people are waiting for that one to come to be licensable. Like all the other Alice in Wonderland musicals are going to go away, I think, when Wonderland becomes available. He's done a lot of stuff that I really like. And then this just is like, let me see what else he wrote. Oh, Victor Victoria. There's so much that he's done that's like just really good. So this interview, I was like, okay, why did this get made? Because I don't really know who this is for. Is it just for dads who love war history? And so I found this interview with him, and he was really giving me dads who love war history energy. Like baseball cap and everything. And I also feel like, in general, stereotyping a little bit, dads who love war history also romanticize it a little bit. Or I'll say
I don't think you're
people
wrong.
Who love war history. I don't think it has to be strictly dads, but that's who I think of.
Right.
It's like,
oh, yeah.
Dads who love
history dads.
Yeah, yeah. Dads who love the Civil War. Like every dad loves a war, right? It's either Civil War, World War II. Like there's some kind of war that you're obsessed with, and you know all the details, and it comes up too much. But like, why are we romanticizing this? People were brutally murdering each other. Yeah. Like, it's terrible that this happened. So, like, why are we romanticizing it? And it feels like this show does that a lot.
That actually reminds me of something that I want to bring up. Because there was something I remember seeing in the script that I was like, oh, this is trying to make a point, but then it completely, like, 180'd itself in, like, the next sentence. It's actually a line by Frederick Douglass. It's in the middle of The Glory, the finale song. There's a line by Frederick Douglass where he says, "The surrender of the Confederacy, the president's second inauguration, and his funeral have all happened in little more than a month. 620,000 Americans have lost their lives on the issue of slavery. Mr. Lincoln seems slow, cold, and indifferent. But given the sentiments of the country, he was swift, radical, and determined. Taking him all in all, I know that infinite wisdom has seldom sent any man into the world better fitted for this mission than Abraham Lincoln." That, to me, feels like a complete 180.
I think a little bit earlier, he criticizes Lincoln pretty openly, like maybe the speech before that.
Yeah, I mean, he has a couple where he does that. He's like criticizing Lincoln.
So anyway, the Frank Wildhorn interview, he basically says that the piece is, they wrote it as an educational piece. Like they went through and they took all of these real documents and used it to write the show. And he's like, the education is right there because there's statistics and numbers in the dialogue. Like all the information is there if you're paying attention. And that, you know, some of these songs are based on real people. Like I Never Knew His Name comes from a nurse's diary. Like this teenage nurse wrote in her diary that she had to take care of all of these people who were going to die and were dying slowly and painfully. And it was too painful for her to know their names. But he says it with a smile. He's like, "Isn't this great? We found her diary and she was dealing with so much trauma that she didn't want to learn people's names." And then like Sarah's based on a real person too. Because Bill was, you know, the character Bill who sings the song Sarah, he was shot in the stomach and he knew he was going to die, but it was going to take a long time. So just like everybody else, he had pen and paper in his pocket and he took it out and he wrote her a letter. Isn't that cool? It's like, no, tone, Frank.
Tone's, yeah, sound like,
can you maybe put your teeth away? It was just so much smiling. And this is that same energy from people who like romanticize and glorify a war. They're like, wow, this thing happened. Like, I understand fascination with literally anything, but like morbid fascination is a thing. And it makes me so uncomfortable that people are like, I feel like this show uses the words glory way too many times.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
So I don't know. After that interview, I was like, I before the interview, I felt kind of weird about the show. It's like, this is someone who has clearly never dealt with, like, clearly never served in the military.
Right.
And, like, experienced any amount of trauma. And I'm saying that as a person who has also never served in the military or experienced that kind of trauma. But, like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
We're talking about, like, the highest number of American casualties.
Yeah, ever.
Ever.
620,000 people died. That's, you know, I think that's part of it where, like, I'll say this. I've always liked history. I like going to museums. And there's, like, battlegrounds, especially in, like, this area, Arkansas and Missouri, that are, like, preserved areas where you can go and you can see, like, oh, this battle took place here. We've got, I guess, artifacts from that time period, so you can look at them and that kind of thing and just educate yourself more about it. But all of these places have a level of, like, solemnity to them. Like, it doesn't feel like a happy place to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it, this show glorifies a lot of it, and, like, what you're saying. Yeah, like you said, the word glory is used a lot. And I felt it was particularly glorifying the Confederacy in, like, a weird way.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't, in particular, the song Last Waltz for Dixie.
That's the other word that came up too many times for my liking.
Dixie.
There's an awful lot of glory and an awful lot of Dixie without, like, there's been such care taken to not vilify the Confederacy.
Yeah. And, I mean, I feel like that was, and that was one of the things I was, like, kind of a talking point for me about this. It was like, let me see where we find it in my notes. I wrote, is this show sympathetic to Confederate soldiers despite the fact that they are heavily, like, or why is this show sympathetic to Confederate soldiers despite the fact that they are heavily considered to be the villains of the Civil War? And if so, what is the purpose of this? Why are you doing that? Is this one of those whole, like, oh, there were good guys on both sides thing? There are good people on both sides thing? And, like, I think about it in a little bit of a sense of, like, our political climate right now is very divisive. Each side sees the other as a villain or a quote-unquote problem with the country. And I think that is very, very different than what was happening during the Civil War.
Go on.
And what I just mean is that, like, I mean, people, there's, like, there's fighting right now, but no one is, there's not a war that we're literally killing hundreds and thousands of people over for a particular issue. And I believe that, you know, I mean, yeah, the reason why we don't have, or, like, a lot of Confederate memorabilia and statues, things like that, have been removed is because it's pretty divisive. Because, like, in the southern states, it's seen as, like, oh, were these guys were war heroes. And I'm like, war heroes for what specifically? You know, it's like, you don't go to Germany and see statues of Hitler.
That's something I thought of too. It's like, this would, for me, this kind of feels like the equivalent of, like, let's write a musical about World War II. And we'll give equal time and energy to the Allies and the Axis, and then also, like, the Jews and other people who are persecuted. And all the soldiers want is glory. And also, boy, this is scary. And the victims are strong because they have faith.
Yeah, it's essentially what it was. If you took this tone and flipped it to World War II, it's very divisive, you know? And it's just such a weird thing to, like, I mean, I understand, like, I don't know, understand is a strong word, but I don't know if I can say it any other word, but, like, trying to humanize the Confederacy in a way makes some kind of sense to me, but you still have to recognize that what they wanted was a bad thing, and to lift them up is controversial. And this show feels like it's doing that.
I think some of that is time period and some of that is location. Like the first production of this was in Texas.
Yeah, I know.
And I mean, late 90s, we're still talking about people who, I mean, I guess it still happens today, but it was much more common for people to use the word heritage to get away with stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's not an excuse, but like Old Gray Coat is a whole rock song about being proud to be a Confederate. Like, yeah. I agree with you. I don't think there's a problem in recognizing that there were Confederate soldiers who were just like a bunch of young men who were fighting for a cause because that's what they were expected to do. But mm-hmm. without zooming out a little bit and taking a side, I wonder how much this, I guess it probably didn't read 15 years ago. The last time there was a major production was in 2009. I think there's a reason for that.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, I think if you were, I mean, trying to do this show right now would probably not be a great thing. I did see that there was a production, I think it was in 2021 at like a university somewhere. But I don't know exactly. I mean, I think trying to perform this musical as it is right now in 2025 is going to be rough. Like you have to take a side. You have to pick. As of right now, it feels like the writers of this musical have chosen the Confederacy over the Union.
I think, or at least they've taken very careful steps to make the Confederacy look not bad.
Yes.
It really feels like it's a neutral, like yes, they're trying agree. To take a quote unquote neutral stance on the war and be like, well, these are the facts. And it's like, well, it's not really the facts. There's some facts sprinkled in. There's some statistics sprinkled in.
Yeah.
And like kind of the general order of the way things happened in history. But it's just a bunch of like, I don't want to say passionate songs, but it's a bunch of emotional pieces about, boy, this is sad and scary.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly don't think right now, as is, that there's any fixing this show. As is. You'd have to do a major overhaul.
I was going to say, as I've been sitting with it, I feel like there is a world where you could... It would have to be cut basically in half, I think. And we'd have to lean into the song cycle much more than this idea that it's a review and try to eliminate as much of the real life people as possible. Like, you probably have to take out Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln and like cut all that stuff and just, I don't know, we're talking like 15 songs instead of 29. Mm-hmm. That's just like, oh, this is a person who was on the Union side. Here's a sad song. This is a person who was on the Confederate side. Here's another song. And just make it a shorter piece about the Civil War being a tragedy instead of this big thing that's trying to be a full-length piece that doesn't have a plot and doesn't take a stance.
Yeah. I agree.
But I don't want a piece like that. Like that, we haven't even brought up like the whole slavery issue and how that's handled in the show. Like there's so many songs about slavery in the show that like it's just like, oh, isn't this sad, as if there aren't like people perpetrating this, just like, oh, what a sad situation. And every slave song is like, well, we just have to be hopeful and believe in Jesus and it'll all be okay someday. As if, like I don't like that it frames all of the slaves as helpless. Like, there weren't actual real-life slaves and, like, Black Americans who were active in creating change, and that everyone was all sad and no one was angry.
Yeah.
Like, it's so soft and passive.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you to an extent. And, like, the two, like, quote-unquote upbeat songs that the slaves are intended to sing are actually, there's they have three songs that are upbeat. And yeah, it's unclear to me what the purpose is. Because like Frederick Douglass sings Freedom's Child. And then they sing a song called Someday. That is like, someday we'll be free. And then in the second act, they sing River Jordan, which was a code word. Meet me by the River Jordan was a code phrase for slaves intending to escape. And so they mention it, but I'm like, the only way you would know that, I mean, because like, the only way you would know that specific detail is if you studied Civil War history. And like the Underground Railroad and things like that, if you're just going into this blind and don't know a whole lot of history about the Civil War, you're not going to know what that means. And like the character of Bessie explains a little bit about what's happening before that song is sung, but it doesn't explain what River Jordan is. They just say, oh, someone's going to come and help me cross the border or whatever it is. Into the north. And I don't know, then that was definitely a part of history, but it's also just confusing because there's a lot of, it's confusing because there's a lot of details, but not any of it is specific. You get what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're throwing a lot at you, but we're going to be vague about a lot of stuff.
It feels like they're spending a lot of energy to humanize the soldiers, but also diminish the humanity of the slaves.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, all these young men were feeling so many complex emotions about what they had to endure during their service in the Civil War. But as long as the slaves sing this vaguely religious-coded song, someday everything will be good.
Yeah.
Like, as if... I don't understand. Like, no one experiences any emotions other than, like, sad and hope. And fear in the show. Like, there's no anger. I feel like that's missing.
I feel like there's hints of it, but it's not like full-blown anger.
Right, as if you're afraid to scare the audience.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, maybe it's 1999 and we are afraid to scare the audience. Like, how dare a black person have emotions? Especially if they're negative. Oh, no.
Well, right, yeah. How dare they? Well, I mean, like, there are definitely a lot of problems with this show, or I'll say difficulties with attempting to produce this show. But I mean, I made a list of like four things that are like really hard to do if you want to try to produce something like this. The four hardest things are, number one, there's a lot of boys.
Mm-hmm.
So many boys. Two, there's not really any prominent female roles. Maybe two.
I mean, yeah, but like, welcome to historical theater.
Welcome to musical theater.
Lots of theater.
In the 90s or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Two roles for women. Great. Yeah. Like every show we've covered this season.
Yeah, that was like, well, that's plenty. It has required diversity, a lot of other musicals, such as Hairspray, West Side Story, Miss Saigon, and the rest. And it also has a high potential for controversial portrayals. And that is the biggest one for me. You could unintentionally offend a ton of people very quickly in this show. Depending on how actors are directed to portray specific characters. If that makes sense.
Well, and some of it is written that way. And I feel like there's...
Also true.
I get a sense that the people who made this show would justify it by saying, well, we used like primary sources from the Civil War to create the script.
Yeah.
So this is coming from real life.
I think I would prefer it if this show were historical fiction.
Yeah.
I think that I honestly don't want to knock the idea of like we wanted to use real people's words to tell this story, and I think to an extent you still could do that, but if you really wanted to write a musical about the Civil War you have two opportunities. Like, I think there are two stories that, in quotations, stories from this show that are in conjunction with each other, that if you just honed in the focus on those, it would be a better structure for, like, and you would have somewhere to go other than trying to, like, tell the entire story of the entire Civil War in less than 2 hours or around 2 hours, right? If you focus on this, on the story of Sarah and Bill, and you focus on the story of Clayton and Bessie, I think if you have those two stories running in conjunction with each other, then that would help structure this in a way that could actually be a good story. Because it'd be Sarah and Bill. Bill's choosing to go fight for the Union. And then you have Clayton and Bessie, who are married slaves, who are separated from each other. And they're trying to get back to each other. So you kind of have that story of, like, them being separated and trying to come back to one another. And, like, you know, in the quote-unquote story that this show has, Bill does not come home, but Clayton and Bessie do find each other. So I think that's kind of like the meat of this and where you should go with that. And also, I think, has the potential to be less controversial. And it will could take out a few of the more questionable Confederate-focused songs.
Yes, I mostly agree with what you're saying.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, like, the problems with this show stem from the fact that there's so much music and none of it is specific enough to create any characters for the most part. Like, oh, there's that.
I'm basically just saying take some of the songs and scrap the rest and rebuild the show from the ground up.
There's handfuls of songs that are just, like, so vague. It's like, well, let's write a song about what it was like to be a soldier in the Civil War. And that's it. Like, there's no other framework. And honestly, I don't think the Sarah and Bill songs are very good either, but at least there's a character there.
Right. I mean, Honor Your Name is better than Missing You, My Bill, for sure.
That
but
song. I actually listened through the show on 1.5 speed, and it still felt too slow. I had to keep reminding myself that I was listening to it faster than intended.
Yeah.
I was also thinking about this show compared to, like, other American history pieces. And lots of things pop up if you Google, like, musicals about American history. Things that I don't... Like, the ones that come to mind are 1776 and Hamilton.
Yeah,
those are, I guess, the big ones. But then things like Bonnie and Clyde...
Technically, sure.
But it's, like, two people in American history. It's not, like, as grand of a scale, even though Hamilton is centered on one person.
But he was involved in a lot of stuff, so...
It still feels like it covers, like, bigger things than
that. It covers a lot.
Or,
yeah.
Like, Ragtime as an American history piece. Like, there were a couple that popped up. Mm-hmm. The ones that I was, like, really thinking about were Hamilton in 1776. And so 1776 is, like, mostly literal... you know, for a musical interpretation of the founding of the nation centered on John Adams.
Right.
But you only get the American side of that. It's not like it's America and then also the British perspective or the loyalist perspective.
Right.
Like, it, 1776 centers on specific characters and, like, follows them through the show. There's a clear plot. Hamilton is still the founding of the nation. It's a high concept version of the founding of the nation. And it's more than just like, well, this is a musical, so everyone has to feel good feelings. But also, like, we're talking about a bunch of people, like, real life people who did some bad stuff too. Like, George Washington owned slaves. Right. And is still revered as, like, the father of the nation. And I don't know if, like, 1776 doesn't address any of that. And I'm not mad at it for it.
Well, I mean, the only thing that 1776 really addresses, like, it does address slavery because of the one song.
Yeah.
And, like, the South doesn't want to, like, Because it's, I mean, part one of the plots of 1776 is that Thomas Jefferson wrote into the Declaration of Independence that every person who lives on the soil will be free, including slaves. And then the South fought that.
Right. Well, Thomas Jefferson was a slave owner.
Oh, I know that. But I mean that. But that was part of the plot, and I know that's like probably not accurate. So, but that, you know, it is mentioned, but it's not the main focus of the show.
Right, and I think maybe some of that comes from the fact that John Adams is from Massachusetts, which was not a slave state.
Right.
So, like, maybe that's where that kind of gets away with it for me. I mean, 1776 feels incredibly dated, in my opinion, and if you want to produce a historical piece that, like, feels old, there it is. And you also want a show that only features two women.
Yeah. Right. Also.
But like Hamilton, I guess maybe because it's more high concept and it purposefully breaks stereotypes in casting and like musical styles. And also like maybe it's different because I've seen interviews with the cast, the original cast, acknowledging like Washington and Jefferson and like some of the other characters were slave owners. And like, how do you come to terms with that as a person of color playing a historically white person? I don't think we're necessarily the right people to talk about this, but like, why do those shows,
what do you mean,
feel so, why do those shows feel so different than this one? And I think it's that
that's a great question.
They're taking a side.
I think you're probably right. I think I would agree with that because the show is trying too hard to be neutral, and in its neutrality ends up glorifying neither, or glorifying the incorrect side is what it feels like. But I don't know.
I don't think it's unfair to say that there were good people probably on both sides of the Civil War, like on an individual level. Right. I'm sure there were good people who were fighting for what they believed in or what they believed to be a good cause regardless. Like, I don't have a problem with them making up a character who's a Confederate soldier and making the audience feel sympathy towards that character.
Right.
But also you have to zoom out and be like, yeah, then the Confederacy also were the bad guys and the losers.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
Stop using the word glory and Dixie so much. Please.
There was something else. There was like, as you were talking, there was something I thought of and I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh, here's what it was. Cause like, you know, where we are in Arkansas was in the Confederacy, but they have a very complicated history with the Civil War. It's not cut and dry. Like Arkansas was just like, it was not like, yeehaw, let's go and join the Confederacy. No, it was a lot more complicated and nuanced than that because of where they sit in the United States. And so like, it was not very, it's not cut and dry. And so I understand for some states it very much was.
Oh, I lived in South Carolina for a while.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Don't get me wrong. But that being said, I don't have a problem with them, trying to sympathize a little bit with like what Confederate soldiers were also going through because they were suffering the same way Union soldiers were to an extent. But you do have to acknowledge the fact that their overall cause is not a good one, like their overall goal. And you have to I don't necessarily think that the South needs to be so incredibly vilified that I feel like at times it has been. We've moved past this as a nation and to a pretty large extent. Maybe not. Again, I'm a white guy. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I don't know, like, I'm going to shut up. I don't feel like I'm going to get anywhere. I'm going to stop talking.
I think this piece comes from people. I see it way more in the South, having lived in both the South and the North. I see it way more here in the South than, I guess, are we calling this the South? I don't feel like where we live is really the South. in the way that people think of
no,
it. Like,
so
Northwest Arkansas is not the South.
I mean, if you want to get into
in the same way. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make here is that people in the South, particularly white people in the South, sometimes are afraid to talk about slavery and like the facts of slavery, as if they should personally feel guilty for what happened. Like, the people who are alive right now are not personally responsible for slavery. You can acknowledge the facts of what happened. You don't have to be like soft and gentle with children. Like, I have been in places where people taught that the Civil War was not fought over slavery.
I have been in places where that has also been taught. Yeah.
Because we might hurt someone's feet. Like, I always get the
states'
sense,
rights.
Yeah. States' rights to own slaves.
To own slaves is the rest of that sentence. Yeah.
I don't understand the people who are like so scared of being white and also acknowledging that slavery was bad at the very least.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like my voice needs to be the loudest one in the conversation, but
neither do I.
When I'm in a situation where sometimes I have to teach like historical facts, like my classes read A Raisin in the Sun. And like, we're going to acknowledge, and this is not Civil War history, but like, we're going to acknowledge how racism continued beyond the Civil War in America. And that's a fact. Like, this, the fact that this piece exists is a testament to the fact that there were still lots of racial issues, and still are lots of racial issues in this country. And I talk with my students about how, know that I'm a middle class white lady and I'm not the best person to teach this to you, but like, I'm who you've got. So here we go.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't understand the people who choose to become history teachers and are afraid of teaching history. You don't have to stop. Like, sure, maybe we can be softer and more delicate about things with elementary school students. But. Yeah. When you're getting into the nitty gritty with like high school and college and post grad, all that's like, you should be talking about things as they happened, not softening them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, two facts. One, slavery bad. Two, South wrong. That was it. That's really all you need to take away from the Civil War, in my opinion. But like, if those are the two basic things you have to acknowledge, then acknowledge it in your show, Wildhorn.
That interview, I was just amazed because of the other things that he's written. I was not expecting that, like, Civil War dad energy.
Yeah.
I don't know. At the risk of getting too political.
Woof. Well, yeah. Well, let's not.
Yeah.
Let's kind of get too political. Well, anyway, I will say that early year you brought up 1776. And the song, like, the only song I had heard from this show, you actually showed me earlier this year, was Tell My Father. I had never heard any other song from the show, but you showed that to me. And then I thought about it and I was like, is this song just Mama Look Sharp? And technically, no,
but
they're very similar.
Yeah.
I will say this. I kind of went down a little bit of a rabbit hole and I studied these two songs like lyrically.
Okay.
And I mean, at its most basic, Tell My Father is a guy who's like, is a young man who is dying, who wants people to tell his father that he died with pride. While Mama Look Sharp is about a guy who was terrified to die and was like, Mom, please come find me. I'm scared. I'm going to die. That at its core, those are the two like differences. Of the two, Mama Look Sharp is a more emotional song, in my opinion. Though I do think Tell My Father has merit to it as far as like, those that choose to go to war and die versus those that are, I don't know what really what the difference is. I'm gonna stop there, but like, tell my father, definitely has the air of someone who has chosen to go to war and is dying and just wants them, like, wants to, like, tell them that I was brave, basically, is what the song is about. While Mama Looks Sharp is like, he's just afraid. Like, and war is like that too. You know, where, like, I don't know.
Romanticization. And a rainbow. Like, the more you know, rainbow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly, Tell My Father is probably the greatest legacy of this show, and only because there's a choral arrangement of it.
Yeah.
And so men's choirs sing it. Which is how this song came on our radar. Like, I've heard this song, and then I've heard Sarah. I think Sarah is also on the Jimmy Awards list.
Oh,
I'm
is it?
I'm pretty sure at the Discovery Awards recently, like a couple years ago, one of the finalists sang it. Because I knew that one, too.
But yeah, just looking at the songs lyrically, I think Mama Looks Sharp is a more tragic song. Because, like, I mean, we're not talking about 1776 specifically. But the lyrics of that song are like, them soldiers they fired, oh ma, we did run, but then we turned round and the battle begun. Then I went under, oh ma, am I done? Like, this is a guy who was in a fight, in a battle. He was shot, and now he's lying on the ground. My eyes are wide open, my face to the sky. Is that you I'm hearing in the tall grass nearby? Mama, come find me before I do die. That's what this, and this song is, this whole song is that. Like, someone who is dying and they're like, all they want is, because like, it's a young person who's like, they died, like they've been shot, they're dying in a field, and they're like, ma, come find me. Versus Tell My Father, which has lyrics like, tell my father that his son didn't run or surrender, that I bore his name with pride, and I tried to remember you are judged by what you do while passing through. As I rest neath fields of green, let him lean on your shoulder, tell him how I spent my youth so the truth could grow older. Tell my father when you can, I was a man.
Do people, I guess the Civil War is far more romanticized than the Revolutionary War.
I think that's
and
true.
And also, like, World War One, World War Two.
Yeah.
Wonder how much of that is because there's been like a long-standing American culture of patriotism and nationalism, and in every other war there was an other, like, non-American side.
I think that's a good point to bring up, because the Civil War, it clearly was Americans fighting other Americans, so they're, we can't other each other. I mean, we do all the time, but, you know.
Well, and I wonder if it's a, man, I wonder, did I know what Frank Wildhorn looked like before today? He's from New York. I was going to say, is he from the South?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too.
He,
I've been thinking about that the whole
he's
time.
He's from New York.
Well, what about the other people that were the creatives in this?
Oh, now you're asking hard questions. Hold on. Oh, they don't have Wikipedia pages. Okay.
Jack Murphy does.
Does he? Oh, he also worked on Wonderland. I didn't think the lyrics were particularly good.
Jack Murphy also worked on Death Note, the musical. Doesn't say where he's from. He has collaborated with composer Frank Wildhorn on many projects. Man, Frank Wildhorn must just really like war stuff. I think you're right in saying that he's a war dad. Just likes that stuff. Because apparently he also wrote the music for a musical called Mata Hari, which is about a dancer and spy during World War One. But at least that one's specifically about a person.
What a weird guy, you know? How do you write the Scarlet Pimpernel and also this? I don't know. Well, my last thoughts on this show is that I don't think it's salvageable, which we've already kind of talked
you
about.
Don't think
like,
so?
It does not fly in 2025. Unless I think maybe in a super conservative community, like an all boys school in the South somewhere, maybe at the amateur level you could get away with it for the parents who don't know theater and are just like, oh, look at our boys putting on a show, and
yeah,
probably
maybe
with Confederate sympathizers. But like I think the problem with it is it doesn't take a stance. It's just a bunch of rock ballads quote about history. But there's no real tone other than like, oh, wasn't this sad?
Yeah. And that's kind of the problem here, but
it comes so close. Like we even get Frederick Douglass criticizing Lincoln, and then it's like, well, he died, so I guess he was okay.
Yeah, that's literally what happens. I remember reading the script, and I was like, why this 180, Frederick Douglass?
Because he's dead. We can't shit on Abraham Lincoln. He died.
He signed the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah, and then
okay,
he
whatever,
died.
All right.
Dead well, people can't be bad.
That's true.
Ugh.
I know. Well, there's a couple things. One of the things I thought would be kind of fun for you specifically, I did find Ben Brantley's original New York Times review.
Ooh.
And I pulled out some highlights. It's from April 23rd, 1999. And I will not read the whole article, but I pulled about four or five little snippets that he wrote and condensed them a little. They are still his words. I just kind of edited it a little bit. About this show. Okay? Are you ready for this?
I'm kind of disappointed you're not going to read the whole thing, but go ahead.
I mean, I feel like if you want to read the whole thing, go to the New York Times. You can Google
anyone
it.
Anyone who is
go to
savage
New York Times,
enough to tear this apart the way I really want to. It's Ben Brantley.
Oh, I know. My namesake, unfortunately not. Anyway.
Maybe not, unfortunately.
Well, okay. All right, so here's what he wrote. In the wake of any war comes questions, dazed, wondering questions. What, finally, did we gain from fighting? What did we learn? Why did this conflict have to happen in the first place? Perhaps, then, it is appropriate that the new musical called The Civil War, whose subject is nothing less than what its grand, stark title promises, should provoke a similar litany of questions. Why are we here at the St. James Theater? What is the point of remaining for more than 2 hours? Why would anyone stage a show that improbably drains the drama from what is still the most fraught and painful chapter in American history? You are unlikely to leave the Civil War with its tunes clinging doggedly to your memory in the sticky manner of Mr. Lloyd Webber's. Mr. Wildhorn's songs
oh,
for
no.
the Civil War... Mr. Wildhorn's songs for the Civil War blend into one bland current of generic pop. The overall effect is of being imprisoned not in some theme-appropriate cell in Andersonville, but in a jukebox stocked entirely with B-side selections. Generic is the operative word for the Civil War. The show is without plot and essentially without character. It's a bit as if ragtime had been crossed with a review like Smokey Joe's Cafe and then run through a homogenizing synthesizer.
Oh, ragtime was around the same time as the show. Ah, that didn't even occur to me. Oh, Aronson Flaherty kicked Wildhorn's ass. It didn't even occur to me that ragtime was on Broadway at the same time as this.
Yeah. A little earlier, right?
I think ragtime was 98.
Was it?
1998 Broadway.
Okay. There you go. But last time during Sunset Boulevard, we talked about how it had won some Tonys, but I didn't know what was happening around it at the time. So I made specific intention to look and see what other musicals were going on around the time that the Civil War came out. And so it lost the Tony for Best Musical to Fosse.
Oh. Oh, the Dark Ages.
Yeah. However, a couple others, in my opinion, the most notable shows that premiered that same Tony season were Footloose and Parade.
Oh.
Because Footloose is still around, and Parade was also nominated for Best Musical, but it didn't win it.
That's interesting.
Which surprises me a little. I wonder why Parade wasn't more up there. But yeah, it's interesting that, yeah, Parade and Footloose are the two probably most well-known musicals that came from that time, that in that Tony season. There were some revivals that were also on, like Annie Get Your Gun had just come back with Bernadette Peters. On the Town, Peter Pan, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. These were all revivals that were also happening at the same time. So, I mean, not only did it have competition, it had, like, I mean, as far as, like, butts in seats, it had a lot of competition. But also, like, I think just because it is so non-structured, that really didn't help it. And, like, I know you said that you feel like there's nothing salvageable. I feel like there's maybe a couple songs you could pull, but then you just, like I said earlier, scrap the rest and start from the ground up.
Hmm.
I did make a note here about some songs I did enjoy, despite the fact that this show doesn't really make a ton of sense. I did say, well, Tell My Father's probably the most well-known song from the show. And Sarah is what you also mentioned. But then some songs that I enjoyed. I personally did like the opening number, By the Sword and Sons of Dixie, that kind of combined song. It's pretty rousing, and I think you could potentially keep it, but then, like, okay, we're done with the South now. It's kind of just get rid of them. And then I liked Freedom's Child, and I prefer having Sarah and Honor of Your Name together. Like, if you're going to sing one, sing the other. It's kind of how I feel like about those. I think Sarah stands better on its own than the other one, but I prefer them as a medley is not the right word because you don't want to do that, but, like, I guess a medley would be the right word, wouldn't it? You sing one after the other. Is that right or no?
Like, they're back to back?
Yeah, they're like, you just said, like, they're better when they're back to back, in my opinion.
I think a medley implies more than two, but sure.
Okay, sure. And I also liked the song How Many Devils, just because of, like, the implications of what it's talking about. As far as, like, the horrors of war, essentially. Let me refresh myself before we might have to scrap that part. I remember listening to it and being like, oh, I like this, but I want to make sure I'm not being an a-.
While you're doing that, I didn't listen to the Complete Works album. I listened to the, like, the pre-Broadway album.
Oh, the, like, the Nashville Sessions one?
And then, like, supplemented with the show that we watched, the production we watched. But huh. I could tell which one was the Hootie and the Blowfish song. I just want you to know. It was pretty obvious. But none of them really stick in my head.
I mean, I will preface this and say that I listened last night to Tell My Father and Mama Look Sharp back to back. I listened to Mama Look Sharp first and remembered that, and, like, woke up with that song in my head and not Tell My Father. So I don't know what that says. Yes, I am. So I was right. And How Many Devils is very much about, like, the horrors of war and, like, what else was going on, not just, like, it's because it's all three groups kind of singing together about what's happening. Like, this lyrics go 1, 2, pick them up and put them down again and watch the miles roll by. 3, 4, pick them up and put them down again until you stop one and you die. Then it goes 3, 4, when the hell did shoes get so damn dear and life becomes so damn cheap? 1, 2, those damn Yankees ain't giving up as easy as we thought they would be. 3, 4, those damn Yankees ain't near as scared or half as hungry as we, like, things like that. And then, but they all sing together. How many miles, how many fears, how many days, how many years, how many rivers of blood, sweat, and tears, how many times into the fray. How many men won't walk away? How many hells filled with how many devils to pay? So it's just like this never-ending grind of war and it's like war and suffering and battle and then more and then more. And that's just like this constant turning thing, which I felt was like one of the more impactful songs on its own. Like if you even pulled it out of the, even if you pulled it out of the show and you just performed that one song by itself, it would still make sense as far as like what's happening. So that one for me was also a standout, but yeah, I do get also get what you're saying too about Freedom's Child. It does sound like Hootie and the Blowfish sang it on the Complete Works.
I could tell.
And yeah, and that's what it sounds like. Though I did seek out the original Tony performance of that song, and I was like, honestly, kind of blown away. It was really, really good. The performance of that particular song. Have you seen it?
No, and I don't doubt that there are strong performers. I feel like there's lots of opportunity for a strong vocal performance throughout the show, mm-hmm. particularly because a lot of the stuff is written really for really high voices.
Yeah.
Like the high school production that we were able to watch, there were moments, there were a couple of kids who were really talented and a couple who were, you know, just high school boys who were singing, mm-hmm. which is typical. Yeah. I'm not on the high schoolers. But when the girls came in and supplemented those high notes, I was like, haha, there they are.
Yeah.
This has the, and I've heard a couple of professional clips. And so it's always fun to listen to adult men pretend to be like 20 years old and sing high notes. Why do you think people love Newsies so much?
Yeah. Well, that's true. It's because Jeremy Jordan's in it.
That's kind of where I'm at. Like, if you really like this show, maybe consider Newsies.
And you have the boys. Well, I mean, I will say that the main performer in the Tony performance is Keith Byron Kirk, who played Frederick Douglass in the original production. And he's incredible. He's really, really good in the show. Or at least in that one clip that I watched. He was really, really good. And they also did a performance of River Jordan on the Rosie O'Donnell show, and I watched that as well just to see what it was like. She pushed so much freaking musical theater on her show. I didn't realize that, but looking back now, because I used to watch Rosie O'Donnell when I was a kid, but like going back now and looking, I'm like, man, she pushed so much musical theater and so much bad musical theater because it was the 90s. I
mean, we do have half of the songs from Seussical in a different key because of her.
That's true. Yeah. But it was like the three I can remember now from her show, Seussical, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, and Civil War.
Like, there's a great clip of Sutton Foster singing Gimme Gimme. I think it's from Rosie O'Donnell's show. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
honestly, anything to not talk about this show anymore.
Yeah. Well, I did write like a lot of some of the songs are beautiful, but they are not memorable. I couldn't tell you. I literally have to continue go back and looking and see what the titles of the songs are, because I don't remember what they are. Except for Freedom's Child. That one's like, that's Hootie and the Blowfish, so I can remember that one. I will say I was also a little surprised at how prominent Frederick Douglass is in the show. Like, he's there a lot. Like, surprisingly a lot.
Was he added to try to make it seem like they were making a point, or was he pulled back because he was too much for Texas?
I feel like it was the former. I feel like that once they added more of him later.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hot takes with Emily Chabon.
Yeah. I also wrote this too, just thinking about it, that the show does work better, I feel like lends itself better to a concert style format or like a song style format and not as a full blown musical. Gun to my head, have to produce this show. That's how I would try to do it. I would not want to do it as a full blown musical. I would push to do it as a concert.
Nah, just shoot me. I don't want to do the show.
Well, I mean, I don't plan on it anytime soon.
Gun to my head, you have to produce this show. Nah, pull the trigger, man. I'm done.
Well, I have kids and you don't, so that's the difference, I think.
Why is my life less valuable because you have children? I cannot stand people like that. And I will get on my soapbox now about this.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, of course you are. I'm not. Moving on.
Moving on.
I'm over this discussion, honestly.
Yeah. No Dreamcast. Don't need
one. I don't want to do it. There's no point.
Get it out of here. No, that's what
it wouldn't,
I'm saying.
Like, it wouldn't even be fun to do it in a way that, like, the show is so bad.
Right.
Like Baker Street is so bad that it's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
This, no. And I it's weird that Baker Street is the metric. What a life. Even.
Well, would you.
Honestly, I would rather do a show that I hate. Because I'm.
Then do this.
We're like an hour and 30 minutes into this conversation. And so I'm like a little. I have more emotions right now because I'm exhausted from talking about the show and I'm ready to be done talking about the show with you. But really, I'm so neutral on this show. Like, it left no impact on me at all. So if we're talking about rating this show, this is like a 3 for me. Like, I'm not mad at it, but it's stupid and it's bad and I don't ever want to think about it again. I would yeah. rather do Joseph than this. Because at least I have some feelings about it.
That is very low praise.
Frank Waldhorn wrote good stuff. It pisses me off when people who are really talented also produce shit. Pasek and Paul, you're next.
Well, I'm going to jump with you on the 3 bandwagon. I agree.
It's just like bad and not fun ways.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be curtains for us here at The Greatest Showman. If you would like, you can follow us on any social media at Greatest Show Pod, or you can send us an email at thegreatestshowpodcast@gmail.com and let us know what you think of the show. Are we wrong? We're not, but you can tell us if you want. Let us know what other shows we should cover in the future. Emily's just done. She's very done.
I've passed. Tell my father I was a man who was exhausted. Why did I get a degree in musical theater?
So you could someday have this podcast with me is what I like to
Why
think.
Why are we talking about this? Like, really, yesterday I considered being like, please, can we do a different show?
Really?
Wow. Because I don't have anything to say about this because it's bad. And like, not in a fun way bad.
And not in a fun way bad. As opposed to Baker Street and Trailer Park?
Yeah, because those are could like really easily shit on. And this one is just like, well, this is dumb.
Well, good news is,
Sondheim.
We never have to talk about the show again.
Thank goodness. It's The Greatest Showman is produced by Emily Chavone and Brantley Wheeler. Our theme song is by the amazing Patrick Duffy. Links to all of his contact info in the episode description. You can find us all over social media at Greatest Show Pod. Slide into Brantley's DMs and tell him why he's wrong and has horrible taste in musicals. If you have a suggestion for a musical we should cover in the future, send us an email at thegreatestshowpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Okay. I'm going to take that last sentence again because he's got some big words and I'm dumb. Okay. It's a bit as if Ragtime had been crossed with a review like Smokey Joe's Cafe and then run through homogenizing synthesizer.
Homogenizing synthesizer is my new band name, I call it.
But yeah, it's like, it's pretty savage. It's very fun. I remember reading his review about the 1776 revival, and it was incredible.
We could be Ben and the Brantleys, and our first album is called Homogenizing Synthesizer.
Homogenizing Synthesizer. Yeah, there you go.